Vasudevam Vasudeva Guhashayam Narayanam Aniyamsam Nirashir Ayajat Prapum. Without material desires, Maharaja Yati worshipped the Supreme Lord, who is situated in everyone's heart as Narayana and is invisible to material eyes, although existing everywhere. Purport. King Yaki, although externally seeming very fond of material enjoyment, was internally thinking of becoming an eternal servant of the Lord. 51 word meanings. Avam, in this way, Varsha Sahasrani, for 1,000 years, Mana Trishnai, by the mind and five knowledge-acquiring senses, Mana Sukham, temporary happiness created by the mind. Vidhana, executing, api, although, na atipyat, could not be satisfied. Sarvabhauma, although he was the king of the entire world, kat indriyai, because of possessing impure senses. Evam varsha sahasrani. Mana shushtai mana sukham.
Mana shushtai mana sukham.
Vidhano pina tripya.
Vidhano pina tripya.
Sarvabhauma karindriyai.
Sarvabhauma karindriyai.
Evam varsha sahasrani.
Evam varsha sahasrani.
Mana shushtai mana sukham.
Mana shushtai.
Vidhano bina tripya.
Vidhano bina tripya.
Sarvabhauma karindriyai.
Sarvabhauma karindriyai.
Evam varsha sahasrani.
Evam varsha sahasrani.
Mana shushtai mana sukham.
Mana shushtai mana sukham.
Vidhano bina tripya.
Vidhano bina tripya.
Sarvabhauma karindriyai.
Sarvabhauma karindriyai.
Evam varsha sahasrani.
Evam varsha sahasrani.
Mana shastraya mana sukham.
Mana shastraya mana sukham.
Vidhano bina tripya.
Vidhano bina tripya.
Sarvabhauma karindriyai.
Sarvabhauma karindriyai.
Evam varsha
sahasrani.
Mana shastraya mana sukham.
Vidhano bina tripya.
Sarvabhauma karindriyai.
Evam varsha sahasrani.
Mana shastraya mana sukham.
Senses and enjoying material possessions for 1,000 years, he was unable to be satisfied. Srila Prabhupada's purport: the khad indriya, or unpurified senses, can be purified if one engages the senses and the mind in Krishna consciousness. Sarvapadi vinirmuktam tatparatvaina nirmalam. One must be free from all designations. When one identifies himself with the material world, his senses are impure. But when one achieves spiritual realization and identifies himself as a servant of the Lord, his senses are purified immediately. Engagement of the purified senses in the service of the Lord is called bhakti. Rishikena rishikesha sevanam bhaktir puchate. One may enjoy the senses for many thousands of years, but unless one purifies the senses, one cannot be happy. Ascend the Bhakti Vedanta purports of the 9th canto, 18th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Kinyayati Regains His Youth. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Evam Varsha Sahasrani Manashishtaya Manasukam Vididhano Vinatya Sarva Bhama Karindriya. Abha Maharaja Yati was the king of the entire world, and he engaged his mind in 5 senses in enjoying material possessions for 1,000 years. He was unable to be satisfied. Here we have a good example of not being able to be happy through material pleasure. Our tendency is to think that pleasure equals happiness, especially in the modern age. Trying to get more and more pleasure. We have more and more ways of doing it. I think now as the technology increases, where will it end? Our ability to create enjoyment, virtual enjoyment. We can just imagine as it becomes more and more sophisticated. Practically anything you want, which you may not be able to get now, you'll be able to create it holographically or in some way where it appears real. You can create, you just imagine a whole wall of your house you can create as a big screen. You have that world right there. It's an imaginary world that you can create. Now one thing that's very popular is the role-playing games. There's a site called Second Life, I think, and there are others like that, where you take on different, well, they're called avatars, actually. You imagine yourself to be this person, you know, medieval warrior or whatever it is, and you create all kinds of things, whole personality. You create that being, and people spend hours and hours and hours of time online as this person they've created out of their imagination. So they're living vicariously. They're actually living in another body. Their mind is in that body, exists. Their identity, it's a kind of another false ego they've created. And they're enjoying in that way. So I was thinking, what an escape that is. What an intoxication it is to be always putting your mind into that other sphere of existence which has nothing to do with you. So as our technology increases, so we may think this is very pleasurable with the senses. We're able to enjoy in this way. Whatever we want, you can make yourself invincible in this world that you create for yourself. So as technology increases, we'll be getting more and more pleasure. No more and more ways to get pleasure, to try to squeeze pleasure out of this material world. But are we going to be any happier? That's the question. We see, of course, if we look back at history, we've increased our ways of getting pleasure. Of course, that's debatable, because there's so much pleasure to be gained from a very simple agrarian life, to be able to, the pleasure one gets in association with nature, Mother Earth, to see the change of the seasons. I've been noticing lately, watching spring come in, I think it's so nice, isn't it? Spring is such a wonderful season. Krishna says, says in Bhagavad Gita, the seasons I am spring. The flowers start coming, the grass gets green, and the temperature is so comfortable. It's very nice. In fact, I had a thought, I was thinking, it seems as I get older, I'm noticing the seasons more. And I thought, I wonder if I'm noticing my own seasons more. The seasons changing in my life as I'm heading into the autumn and the winter of my life. I should become more aware of that too. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, we should keep this in the forefront of our mind, janma mrityu jarabhyadhi. Especially death is coming, we have to be aware of it, so we have to watch our own changing seasons. But we have so many ways of escaping from that, entering into the illusion of this world, becoming absorbed in the whole game, which is really what it is. Game of trying to beat material nature at the forefront of it. The star players in this game, you could say, are the scientists. Isn't that their idea? This their they want to conquer the part of material nature that controls us. We're trying to break free of that. I was taking a walk in the woods recently, and I saw some animal tracks. And I said to myself, or to the animals, I said, now I'm in your world. You see the animals' tracks, and you think, I'm an intruder here, because I don't live here. When it gets dark, I go home, take shelter, something else. But they live here. This is their world. But we, human beings, we've risen out from that in some ways. We've escaped that by the use of our intelligence. We've escaped that kind of existence. We're not so bound, we're not so controlled in certain ways by certain aspects of material nature. We're able to create things for ourselves to at least in some ways rise above it. So I was thinking how we have this tendency that we want to rise above. We want to rise above nature. And ultimately, actually, it's the soul that has that drive, because we want to rise completely out of this world. Not just out of nature into the suburbs, but out of this whole world, we want to rise above it. That's the aspiration of the soul, as Prabhupada said. The soul wants to experience the free light in the spirit. We want liberation from all of that. But unfortunately, we're stuck here. If we're not, at least if our life is devoid of spiritual practices, we're not making any progress of getting out of it. And we're just here, so we're trying to do the best we can, getting as much pleasure, rearranging things as we can. And we're always thinking that if I can just get it right, if I can just get a little bit more. I don't quite have it yet, but if I get a little bit more, if I arrange things just a little bit better, then it'll be good. Then it'll be cool. Then I'll be happy. So we see in the example of King Yayati, he did it for 1,000 years. We're not going to have 1,000 years to do it. So he couldn't get it right in 1,000 years. And look at what he had at his disposal. Here he's called Sarvabhauma. Sarvabhauma means all of the earth. Or of all of the earth. So he had control. He was the emperor of the whole world. So anything he wanted. We can have desires, but what can we do? You know? I may want to drive a Mercedes, but I have to drive something else. I can only... My aspirations, I don't have the ability to fulfill them materially. So here's a king who anything he wanted, he could get. So with such a big level of opulence. We can just imagine, of course, we hear the descriptions of Krishna and Dwarka. That's a transcendental abode. But even material kings had this kind of opulence with jewels, studded columns in their palaces and so on. And so many wives. This king had one of his, he had thousands, his wife had thousands of maidservants, so they were at his disposal too, as we know. The Kshatriyas would sometimes conceive children in the wombs of their maidservants or their wife's maidservants. So he had all of this, at least 1,000 women around, a beautiful palace and sovereignty. Ishwara, he's a kind of Ishwara. Ishwara is connected to the word Aishwarya. Aishwarya means, of course, us. So if you have power to control. You have a lot of opulence under your control. Another translation, I've seen it, Gopi Pranadan Puruli translates Isha as sovereignty. When you have sovereignty, what does it mean? It means it's in your possession. Thoreau, he said, I am the Lord of all I survey, probably just to quote this. So what was he surveying? Walden Pond, a few acres in the woods, maybe. Not much. But this king, he could survey the whole world. Or at least his agents could. He could send them out. And it was really all his for the taking. He had this kind of power. So even with that, he wasn't satisfied. We'll find in the next chapter when he'll do this whole allegory of the he-goat and the she-goat, where he's talking about himself, comparing himself to just some lusty goat who could never be satisfied. But he does eventually come to the conclusion that, actually even here we see there's a hint of it. It says he's acting as if he's fond of all of this. That he's just an attached householder. But in his heart, he's really thinking that I want to be a devotee, actually. That's what he's thinking. I want to be Krishna conscious. Because he's realizing that no matter how many years I spend doing this, living in the lap of luxury, I'm never satisfied by it. So Prabhupada explains here that the reason for this is because he's enjoying with khad indriya, gross senses or blunt senses. The senses are blunt instruments for enjoyment. We can't penetrate into the real enjoyment with these blunt senses. They're not the right tools. We have to sharpen the tools so they can pierce through the covering of the material energy, enter into the spiritual world. We have to purify them. The blunt, covered senses, it's like trying to taste something with cellophane on your tongue. You can't, it doesn't get through. So similarly, these senses, it doesn't get through. There's a whole spiritual world out there. Alaksham sarva-bhutanam. Kunti Devi, in the first prayer, says that Krishna is, he's actually everywhere. Antar bahir avasthitam. Krishna, and Krishna means the spiritual world. The whole spiritual world is everywhere. As the Brahma Samhita states, Krishna is present within the atom in his fullness. So Krishna is there, and Krishna is never alone. So wherever Krishna is, the whole spiritual world is there. So we're in the spiritual world. It's here, but we don't perceive it. Alaksha sarva bhutanam, Kunti Devi says. We don't see it because our senses are covered. And they become covered because we're using them here. We're distracted. Another simple way is that because we're looking up, always looking somewhere else, we're not seeing what's actually there. That example of the musk deer is given. It has a organ that secretes this fragrance that it likes, musk. So it's looking elsewhere, trying to find where is this coming from? Where is this fragrance coming from? It's so nice. And it's coming from its own body. So we're looking for pleasure. We have this idea that it's there. We're always striving for it. That itself is an indication that it's our heritage. It's something we deserve. It's part of our being that we strive. We're never satisfied. Why is this? If we're part of nature, like the animals, they're satisfied, basically. They don't know any better. And they just think, this is life. This is the nature of existence. This is what it is. But we always have the sense that there's something more. What is that? Why do we have that sense? Because there is something more. We're connected to it. No matter how much the material energy covers us, at least in human consciousness, we tend to have that sense. Of course, Prabhupada says that if you don't have it, then you're like the animals. But any human being that has this sense, that's human life. And you have to try to do something about it. So what do you have to do? You have to purify the senses. That's what this Prabhupada is speaking of in this purport today. We're dissatisfied with our gross material senses trying to get pleasure from this world. That's not satisfying us. So how do we do it? We purify the senses. And he quotes this verse, Sarvapaya Nirmuktam Tatparatvaina Nirmalam Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhaktir Chate. This is bhakti. The solution is bhakti. You have to engage the senses. You can see this verse is important because we're probably just talking about purifying the senses. So how do you purify the senses? Prabhupada is saying you have to do it through bhakti. You're not going to do it some other way. The yogis may have this idea. Of course they don't really. The impersonalists don't have the idea that there are transcendental senses. They're trying to, whatever they're trying to do, they have a different idea of what self-realization is. I was thinking of this phrase the other day. Self-realization. We tend to think of it in the way that it means to realize the self in the sense of know the self, to understand the self, perceive the self, to realize it in that way where we kind of see it. But self-realization can also mean, another phrase is self-actualization, which means realizing the potential of the self. This is another meaning of self-realization. To realize the potential of the self. So what is the potential of the self? The self has personality, it has mind and senses, it has its own real ego. So we realize that through engaging our current senses in the service of Krishna. Of course, even these senses themselves, scientists, they're always trying to explain in some mechanical way. Just like the eye. What is the eye? So it takes in light, reflected light. Light hits an object, gets reflected into our eyes. Then it comes in upside down, actually. And then there's a lens in there that turns it right side up, and it hits on the optic nerve, and somehow that's connected to the neurons in the brain, and we get the sensation of sight. But a camera doesn't get a sensation of sight. The same thing is going on in a camera, but the camera doesn't think, I see. We think, I see. So there's a sense of sight. In fact, in the Bhagavatam, there are several chapters in the Bhagavatam that talk about creation. So in one of those, it talks about how the Purusha, the Mahapurusha, creates different aspects of this material world. So in one of those, for example, it says, because of the desire of the sages to hear, the Purusha created the sense of hearing. They wanted to hear Vedic sound. So it sounds a little, I'm wondering if we got the cart before the horse here, what's going on? How could the sages not have been able to hear? But anyway, that's the way it's explained. So the sense of hearing exists to hear transcendental sound, actually. And it's a sense, tanmatra, the Sanskrit phrase, where it somehow exists as a sort of a subtle energy, the sense of sight, the sense of hearing, the sense of smell. And they can exist disconnected. It's not the body. It's actually the subtle. It's something more subtle. So there's the gross senses, and then there's the subtle senses, and then, of course, there's the spiritual senses. So we have these different levels. So we have to get all the way to the spiritual senses. So we engage the subtle senses and the gross senses in spiritual things. And ultimately, they actually dissolve, ultimately. That's the way it's explained by Kapiladesa. And then the original purified senses, because these other senses are just a kind of covering. This physical body is a covering, and the subtle body is a covering. So we have to get to the spiritual. Jarayatyashuyakosham nirginam analoyata. This is what Kapiladeva says. He says that bhakti, devotional service, dissolves the subtle body. And what is part of that subtle body, of course, it's also the false ego, the ahankar. So bhakti dissolves that. So Prabhupada quotes this verse here, sarvapadivinirmuktam tatvaratvaina nirvamana. That we become purified, we have to give up designation. So what is designation? That means the I am, the sense of I am. That is misdirected. Either I am this middle-aged American man, or I am this avatar on my computer, or whatever. I am, I think I am, at this time. That's a designation. It's a false one. And we know how much is created by that. Because we're raised in America or wherever, then we have American values and we think American ways and we become American teenagers. And so many things. So many of our desires are created because of these designations, because of who we think we are. Even in psychology, of course, this is understood. We try to get to the real root of the person. It wasn't created. So much of our sense of self, which is a false sense, is created by what the environment imposes on us as we're growing up in this world. That we think that I'm the product of all of these, all of this interaction, all these inputs have created who I am. But what is that creation? It's an illusion. The whole thing is just an illusion. It's a concoction. We like to use this word, concoction. So what is concoction? Concoction means mixing different things together. So, and of course it happens repeatedly, that the material energy never stops coming at us. So all of that forms our sense of who we think we are. That designation. We are designated in certain ways. So we have to give that up. Sarvopadi nirmuktam. Vinirmuktam. Mukta means liberated from. Vinirmuktam. Whenever you see the word vi, it means specific or intense. It intensifies. Just like we have mudhas and we have vimudhas. So the vimudhas are really out of it. So vinirmuktam means you have to be completely tatvaratvena nirmalam. You have to get rid of all the contamination. You have to destroy all these contaminations have to be washed away. Cheto dharpana marjana. That's what devotional service does. It washes it away. Then how? And of course, what is the essence of this practice? Rishikena rishikesha sevanam. Bhakti ruchate. Bhakti is said to be Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam, engaging the senses in the service of the master of the senses, Krishna. So this is what Prabhupada is proposing here. And we'll see it will be reiterated in the next chapter by King Yayati, basically the same idea. We find many places actually in the Bhagavatam where devotees, they come to this conclusion, I'm tired of fighting this material energy. I surrender. Krishna wants us to surrender. So he gives us the intelligence to see. Kama dinam katina katita palita durni desha stesham jatamaina karunana trapano pashanti utsrijayatana tayudupate sambhadam labdha buddhis tamayata abhayam nimkshvatthasye. This is from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. The devotee says that I spent my whole life serving the senses. They were the master and I was the servant. And they never gave me any mercy, they never gave me any peace, and they never gave me any satisfaction. So I give up. Now I've got my intelligence, I've figured it out. Now I'm going to surrender in service to Yadupati, which ties into this chapter. We're getting into the Yadu dynasty. So I'm going to surrender to Lord Krishna, Yadupati. And I'll be satisfied. I know that's where I'll find my satisfaction, in the service of the master of the senses, the Lord of the Yadus, Lord Krishna. So the verse again, Evam Varsha Sahasrani Manasrishtaya Manasukam Vididhano Vinatripya Sarva Bhauma Kadindriyaya. Although Maharaj Yaki was the king of the entire world and he engaged his mind in five senses in enjoying material possessions for 1,000 years, he was unable to be satisfied. Any questions or comments? Who's that back there? Mohan?
Is there descriptions of what the purified senses see? Because it seemed like it was mostly all the definition by negation. So is there any, the positive part of
first thing you see is the reality of existence, which we see now as Shastra Chakshus, through the eyes of Shastra. We understand our real position. We understand Sambandha Gyan is a kind of, what is knowledge? Knowledge is a way of seeing. So Sambandha Gyan means the correct way to see this world and our existence. Mainly we understand the three main principles are ourselves, God, and this material world that we exist in now. Ultimately, of course, we'll see Krishna. We'll see Krishna. Premanjanam charita bhakti vilochanena. With purified vision, yam shama sundaram. We see shama sundar in the heart. And as the Chaitanya Charitamrita says, the Mahabhagavat sees only Krishna. Everywhere he sees Ishta Deva Spurti. He sees the Mahabhagavat sees his Ishta Deva. He always sees Krishna. That is, of course, also through the process of remembrance, because whatever the devotee sees, he sees, oh, this is Krishna's. This reminds, just like you see someone's car, you know their car, and you think immediately of that person, oh, there's so and so's car. So the devotee sees, oh, that's Krishna's, it's all Krishna's. So that Krishna's always on the mind. Part of our ahankar is that we think this is mine or this could be mine or boy would it be nice if this was mine. And we don't see Krishna. So that's definitely part of what we see. We'll see Krishna ultimately by purified senses. That's what they're meant for. There's another verse that says, Sudurlabha Bhagavati Loke. The devotee is so rare, the pure devotee is so rare that the perfection of the eyes is to see the pure devotee, the perfection of the touch is to touch his body. So perfection of all the senses is to have them in contact with the pure Vaishnavas. That's another kind of purified engagement of the senses, the service of the Vaishnavas. Yes, Prabhu.
Is it a mistranslation of what we see, not what we see with our eyes, but what we see with our soul? Like, is it more of what we feel than what we see?
Well, that can be said. Just Prabhupada would sometimes say, why put so much emphasis on seeing? There are the other senses. And it's certainly true that when we see, in the ultimate sense, it's not with these eyes, these two organic pieces of matter in our skulls that we're seeing with. We're seeing with the heart, you can say, ultimately. We're seeing with the spiritual senses, in the constitution of the living entity, who we are. The mind, body, senses, intelligence, all of these things, the ego, they're all one thing. They're not distinct entities, they're all one. So our vision is part of our spiritual self, and ultimately that's what we see with.
Seems like Yati and several of these eventually to manifest themselves as pure devotees, but it's not like we're sometimes torn because Srila Prabhupada gives us this vision into the future where we see that we get our pleasure from our relationship with Krishna. It's not just like we try to enjoy until we get disgusted with it and then we give up in disgust that, you know, 1,000 years I had the perfect situation and I couldn't get satisfied, so now what? But all along, we're going through this battle with our senses, trying to get our mind, trying to get our senses focused on looking to Krishna for enjoyment rather than looking to the material world for enjoyment. Where this story, it seems to point to this kind of vain attempt, like a, you know, looking for water in a desert where you just keep going mirage after mirage and then finally you just fall down and you're basically exhausted or even worse. So how do we understand that, you know, that we know intellectually we're supposed to find our happiness from a different situation. We're not supposed to pursue material life for 1,000 years and try and get all of it and then realize that we couldn't get it. So how do we balance that, those two things?
One thing I was thinking when I was reading this 1,000 years, I thought, well, that's nothing. We've all been doing it for millions and millions of years. So what to speak of 1,000 years? So it seems like when we come to Krishna consciousness, we've already reached that point of material exhaustion. As Prabhupada said, one should be pessimistic about material life. So most of us, it seems like, in fact, it seems like that's needed, unless you wouldn't really take out spiritual life with all earnestness unless you had already decided this isn't where it's happening. This isn't, I'm not going to find satisfaction in this. I know I definitely came to that realization, you can say. This path I'm headed on, following the general populace, like Prahlad Maharaj said, I was falling into a blind well full of snakes, and my spiritual master rescued me from that. Therefore, now I owe my whole life to him. He saved me. He's given me a new life. That life belongs to him. So I think we do come to this level of realization. And of course, one of the even the acharyas have noted that sometimes there's initial enthusiasm and then you get into a slump. Maybe they have this in sports, they call it the sophomore slump. You're the rookie of the year 1 year, and the next year you can't hit a pitch or whatever your sport you're playing. So you may lose some enthusiasm. So our only remedy for that is to constantly hear and associate with the Vaishnavas and take advantage of all the things that Prabhupada has given us. So yes, it's not like we're meant to do it right now. Prabhupada wanted us to engage our senses, not to think that, you know, the last week before I die, but now, always, we're supposed to be doing Krishna-conscious things to have our senses engaged in this. Because we know, we already know, we're not going to get satisfaction in this material world. But we're going to have to keep living in this world. But while we're here, that's the way Prabhupada designed our lives, and guided us. Now, he's our guide. That's how he guided us as much as possible. In fact, he would say 24 hours a day. Even our sleeping is for Krishna. We're just rejuvenating the body so we can get it back up and do more service for Krishna. So, of course, it's not easy to do. We have habits. We're conditioned. We're still conditioned souls. So we have. We respond reflexively to this material world. Because there's a part of us that says, no, it just doesn't seem right to serve someone else, to make myself happy. It just doesn't seem right. But it is right, because that's our constitution. That's how we're made. So we have to constantly hear and become purified by what we're hearing. Certainly it becomes more and more real to us.
Why the spirit soul interacts with the material energy? Does he accrue karma reactions and suffers later?
Why, did you say? Was that the first word?
Yeah, like the spirit soul interacts with the material energy, the illusory energy, it's like a dream, and then he accrues karma, and then it's pushed down, it's punished.
That's Krishna's arrangement. Krishna has two energies. One of them pulls us down and one of them covers us over. So Maya is there to... Now we know that our principle is, the whole material world is there on the principle that is for our reformation. So this is part of Krishna's reformation, that this material world is not a good place. You don't belong here. We're here because we don't want to cooperate with Krishna. We have a vision separate from Krishna. So, okay, enjoy this material world, but you're not going to like it there. I'm going to convince you that you don't belong there. So one of the ways is that the more you try to enjoy it, the more you get entangled in it. The worse it gets, ultimately. The more entangled it. You get to a point where you think that you're trying to arrange things, but every time, dukaushadam tadapi dukam, Prahlad Maharaj said. That the cure for the disease is worse than the disease itself. It's also miserable. So you try to cure your unhappiness, your dissatisfaction with your status in this life, your existence. You try to cure it by doing material things, but that just makes things worse. Become more and more bound up. We have this phrase in the first canto, the labyrinthine knot of karma. So So it's just such a tangled mess. Ultimately, we just have to cut it. Yadanu jasina yukta karma granti nibandana. Chindanti govidastasya pona kurya katarakim. Therefore, it's said there in the second chapter of the Bhagavatam, the only way to get free of this mess, this entangling mess, is to cut it with the sword of remembrance of Krishna. So therefore, it says, who will not listen to Krishna Katha? If that's what cuts this knot, what destroys this whole thing, this entanglement, why would you not listen to Krishna Katha? That's the weapon that cuts it. So it's there, the arrangement is there, because it's Krishna's arrangement. It's part of, we have to see that Krishna is supremely intelligent. Sometimes I think I can do better than Krishna. Gee, if I were creating a material world to reform the conditioned souls, I would have done it this way. Probably would have worked better. But we have to, no, we always give Krishna the benefit of the doubt. He's supremely intelligent. We're all in ignorance. We don't know what we're doing. The proof of it is the mess we've made of everything. So with his supreme intelligence, he's made this arrangement, this material energy works just the way he wants it to. Maya is doing it under his order, just like a shadow. Durga works just like Krishna's shadow. She moves exactly as he controls. So it's there. The bottom line is, the material world is the way it is because of Krishna's desire to reform us. And it's out of love. We have to think, logically, that it has to be perfect. There's this whole discussion in philosophy. Was it Leibniz? He said this is this is the best of all possible worlds. That's his argument. This is the best of all possible worlds. And then somebody else, Voltaire, wrote Candide, which is all about how horrible someone's life was. And he said, so this is your best of all possible worlds. So our idea is that yes, it is.